Hi, everyone. Welcome to our first Antique Auction podcast. My name is Martin Willis.
And I am Phyllis Gow. We hope to bring you many entertaining and informative shows all about the auction business and fine art, collectibles, everything in that area.
And we're going to have phone interviews with auctioneers, collectors, specialists. I'm really looking forward to this, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
All right. So why don't you tell them about our website?
Yes, antiqueauctionpodcast.com. Isn't that a great name?
Wow, how'd you ever find that?
So creative, too. Yeah. So that's our website, and we also have an email address. Feel free to email us any suggestions about show topics, any questions you have about what we talk about, or we hopefully will also be able to send you images of things that we're talking about, because we're talking about art. You need images. The email address is auctionpodcast@me.com. That's at me.com.
Yes, and well, as far as our backgrounds go, we could get into our backgrounds, but we don't want to bore you. So if you're interested in looking at any of that, it is on our website. We are looking forward to getting pictures of things that you have interests and questions about. I was a former writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and did an article that was called What's It Worth? And we actually have one that was sent to us recently, a What's It Worth type of situation, and through email. Again, our email address is auctionpodcast@me.com. And the picture we have here came in of a whale's tooth. And basically it was saying, what's it, you know, what is it, what's it worth? This image came from a Ted. Thank you, Ted, for sending that to us. The whale's tooth, and this one in particular, it's hard to tell without holding it in my hand, but the scrimshaw, what is called scrimshaw, is very, very dark and almost too dark. It doesn't look like India ink. So it does look like a period tooth. That means it, you know, a tooth from the 19th century. But this particular whale's tooth is does not appear to be a period scrimshaw. A lot of these pieces were scrimshawn after, like 20, 30 years ago, and it's still being done today. People are still buying rock teeth and old teeth, buffing them down. Go ahead.
So, Martin, you'll be able to tell from our bios on the website that Martin has a lot more experience than me. Let me just interject with a question. To scrimshaw is a verb.
So a scrimshander is someone who does...
How delightful.
Yes, is someone that does scrimshaw. Scrimshaw was done, it was an art that was done on board whaling ships, and what would happen is the sailors had, you know, hours and hours and hours of idle time at sea, and so they did all kinds of wonderful creations. There's these things called ivory swifts. There's sailors' valentines, which were made up a lot of times of seashells, and scrimshaw was a part of what they did, and some of the artwork is just fabulous. Some of it's real. The particular one that was sent to us here, it's kind of folky. It looks like a sort of primitive work. It's of a sailing ship on one side, and on the other side there's a whale, which was pretty common. The ship and the whale that was caught. To pass the hours away, they would take a needle, and it was actually called, I believe they sharpen a fid, it was called, and they would do this artwork and then fill it in with India ink. And then sometimes polychrome. In other words, they'd use different colors of ink. And there can be some beautiful pieces. But thanks, Ted. But this one in particular is not has more of a value for the tooth itself. And probably about, I would say, $200 to $400, something like that at auction. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know that we were very interested in looking at your items. If you'd like to send them to our email address, and we will talk about them in our shows. This is our first show. We have a guest we're calling a little later on, John McGinnis, auctioneer in Massachusetts, well-known worldwide, very good guy, and gets a lot of really nice things. And do you have any, this format, as I said, it's unscripted. And Phyllis is going to fire a couple of questions. I have no idea what she's going to talk about, and I'm going to answer her as an auctioneer.
They're going to be very personal and inappropriate.
Oh, good. Might as well start out that way. All right.
So, long walks on the beach or not? Right, keep it clean.
Okay.
Martin.
Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready.
The question that I'm just dying to ask you, and you probably could ask this a million times, but I don't care.
All right, all right, all right.
Who was the most memorable consignor? Who was the most memorable person
Oh, my God.
that asked you to auction for them?
Well, that's if I go all the way back when it was the business was involved with my father. I've been at this since 1970, involved in it, and so pre-internet. And let's see, if I go way back to then, there's so many interesting consigners
Were
in
there
this.
some dinosaurs, maybe? Just kidding.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Now the interesting thing about consigners is it's an emotional time. Whenever anyone sells their lifelong belongings or whatever, they can get really emotional about it. And as an auctioneer, we think of, in terms of numbers. So a lot of times we're not thinking, well, this has an emotional connection. Their grandfather made it or whatever. There's kind of sayings in the business. One of them is, it's like the book doesn't buy. Things, sentiment has no value in the auction business. It's kind of sad in a lot of ways. But anyway, it creates a lot of emotions with people, and when they're going to part with their items. And yes, I've seen, currently I'm dealing with at least 60, 70 consignors a month. So, and in the great state of California, there's a lot of interesting people, let's just colorful people that we're dealing with out here. But I would have to go all the way back to a long time ago with my father and I working together. We worked in a little town called Elliott, Maine, and Seaboard Auction Gallery. And this was not a consignor, but it was someone that was looking to consign. But it has to be one of my most memorable ones that I can think of. So I'll set the stage. It all happened where we got this call. My father got a call from a guy in Manhattan. Now we were in the state of Maine, which is a 5-hour drive. And it was a small regional auction house with I don't know, maybe 15, 20 auctions a year. So we get this call from this guy saying his mother has these huge estates, and one place was in downtown Manhattan, if we come down and take a look at it. So my father, you got to just picture, my father and I are country boys. We're not used to driving in the big city. So we get in the car and we.
And wait, so without a question, you just hopped in the car, like, oh yeah, Manhattan, sure.
Well, yeah. And so, yeah, we drove around forever, trying to find the place. And there was no parking. And
And people yelled at you,
yeah,
and
well, the taxis tooting the horns, So, nerve-wracking, we finally get there. And it was one of those days where it was like about 100 degrees and humid, and the sounds and smells of the city. And so we get in this really dark building, and we go to the elevator, and it was out of order.
Oh.
And this was on the 5th floor, so we climb up the stairs. And
So the building itself doesn't look nice. It's not a
it
fine
was kind of
estate.
scary.
It's really, it's just a shabby old building with a
Yeah,
broken.
I have to say at the beginning, just to go back a little bit, there was some bait there to get us down there. I mean, he was saying he had really fine furniture and paintings, so
Did he
that his mother
drop a
had.
few names, maybe? Or?
No, he was just saying good American folk art paintings and things
Okay,
like that.
okay.
So it was enough to get us down there. And so we climb up the stairs, we make it up the stairs. My poor father's at that time, he was in his 60s or 70s. And so, and slightly overweight, I should say. And we get to the top, the 5th floor, and we go to the door, and there's like 20 locks on the door, and they're all, knocked on the door, and they're all snapping, all the locks are snapping. So the door opens, and
And there's a guy with a shotgun.
no, it wasn't that good. It was a woman answers the door, but there was right away, it was like, what? There's something really strange about this woman. It was an elderly woman, opened the door with an Adam's apple, and a 5 o'clock shadow with tons of makeup.
Oh my goodness.
And that's okay. So I can handle, whatever people do is fine. Whatever they do, it doesn't matter to me. But I'm realizing this is supposed to be the gentleman who called us. It's supposed to be his mother.
I see.
And you could tell the voice was, the voice that this mother was using was a male voice.
Okay.
And So I'm still, that's still okay. We're still gonna, you know,
And it was the voice that called you originally?
it's similar, yeah.
Okay.
So so I go into this place, and I had to keep looking because I walked in the place and it was absolutely just packed full of beautiful furniture. There was Chippendale chests of drawers and high boy, I remember, and folk art paintings. So they were just stacked up against each other, and more pieces of furniture in any house than you could ever imagine. Things were stacked upside down on top of each other, all the way up to the ceiling.
Oh my goodness.
And it wasn't like they were bad pieces. Everything was real high end, like Philadelphia, you know, Chippendale pieces and sets of chairs, everything just all stacked in upon each other. And you could see there were impressionist paintings. There was it was
Wow.
just really like it was like a home run hit,
Oh my
you know,
goodness,
to
yeah.
it looked at the time back, we're talking, I think this was like a 1983 or four, something like that, maybe a little bit earlier, but it looked at the time, a quick calculation of about $250,000 worth of antiques. That's what I would think that I was seeing,
Wow.
which was big
Wow.
money back then.
Yeah.
So walking through, I had to, you know, all of a sudden we were in the middle of the room. We had to go through this little teeny pass and try not to knock anything over. And all of a sudden I came face to face with a box turtle in an aquarium that was alive, and it scared the heck out of me because it
Yeah.
was moving. So and then just had to like crawl under things. There was like a tunnel to get in through you just can't even imagine what this place looked like. So
Wow.
I was very excited about getting these pieces of furniture, even though it was on the fifth floor, even though we'd have to carry it down. But there was something wrong. First of all, why did they call someone in Maine when New York is, you know, the antique hub of the world, basically, you know, for all this type of furniture? So anyway, we took a break after we were looking through things. We took a break for lunch, and when we came back, knocked on the door, and the son answered. Now, when the son answered, the son had traces of makeup of his, you know,
Yeah, his
and you
disguise.
could just see that, you know, he was the guy that was wearing the wig. So
Oh, wow.
the son was pretending to be the mother, and that got us a little bit nervous. And keep in mind, this was pre Mrs. Doubtfire. So anyway, so we asked him, I said, "Where's your mother?" And he said, "Well, she'll be back any minute." I said,
Were
"Okay."
you and your father like trying not to laugh or looking at each other or
Well, my
exchanging?
father and I had a little bit of a conversation during lunch,
Uh-huh.
and in regards to, you know, what exactly what was going on, you know. So we were ready for about anything when we came back.
Okay.
So again, it was a 5-hour drive down there.
Yeah.
This was around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We had left real early. So I said, "Well, we really love the items that you have, so do you have title? Do you have some type of title you can just show, or where did all this stuff come from?" And then he said it came from homes that closed down that his mother had in different areas. Margate, I think he said, in New Jersey.
You
And he
remember
kept
all
trying
that.
to bait us with, there was a Rolls Royce, and there was, you know, there was, it was just sounded really exciting.
Right.
Anyway, bottom line is, as soon as I asked him to sign an affidavit of ownership, he was in a hurry to get us out.
I see.
Now, I don't know how, like, you know, and I felt bad for the turtle. I wanted to rescue the turtle. But anyway,
Poor
I don't
baby
know
turtle.
how, whatever happened to all that stuff, that whole situation. Someone, I'm sure, took it. But the only thing you can think of is when someone calls you up in Maine and they're down in New York, that they've already talked to everybody else. That's the only thing you
Right.
can possibly think of.
Right.
Unless you have something that that you sell really, really well that
Right.
nobody else does.
Of course.
Otherwise, why bother, right? Okay, so I guess I
Wow.
would have to say that was one of my most colorful potential consigners.
That's a great story.
There's a lot more. We're planning on doing other segments, so that we're going to talk to other auctioneers. We're going to talk to John McGinnis a little later on, but we're going to do other segments where we're going to talk to auctioneers about their most interesting stories and consigners.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Anything
Very
else?
rich subject. Yeah, of course. There are tons of questions that I could ask you. What was the most extraordinary item that you have seen auctioned?
That I've auctioned myself, or that I've seen auction?
Yeah, that you've auctioned yourself.
That I've auctioned myself. Well, extraordinary in the part of value or interest or
Interest.
interest. Okay. Well, I think I'd have to say that the most interesting thing that I've handled, I've been really lucky over the years and worked with I sold the Josiah Bartlett auction, which is a signer of the Declaration, and it was a time capsule. That
Oh,
was
wow.
extremely interesting.
No, that is interesting.
Yeah,
Who
so
did
that
it,
was
who bought it? Do you
no,
know?
it was sold at auction. It's actually put a link up on my website. So it was of a news show of the auction I had in 1989. But I would say the other item that would be the most interesting thing was Abraham Lincoln's second to last letter. It was just a simple note he wrote, but he wrote it on his knee in the White House just an hour before he was assassinated. So that was, I would say, kind of the most interesting thing. But there's just been so many things over the years, it's really hard to say which is more interesting,
Sure.
one thing or another.
Those are really good examples.
But I've seen bizarre things sell at auctions.
Oh, yes? Like what?
Well, not my auctions, of course. But no, I went to an auction, oh, I'd say again, pre-internet, 1980s sometime, and there was everybody was gathered around this table in a glass case, and I didn't even know it was in the auction. I just heard it was an interesting auction.
Where was this
This
auction?
was in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Okay.
So I went into the auction and I kind of like pushed my way slowly through the crowd to see what everybody was staring at. And in the middle of this table, there was a glass case and there was a shrunken head.
A human head?
A shrunken human head.
Male or female?
Hard to say. I remember long hair though. I remember that it had like long hanging hair and
Oh, so
it was
creepy.
very scary. And the people that were there were just doing what I was doing. There wasn't anyone there that bid on it that I saw, because I watched it sell, and he had, I believe, six or seven phone lines,
Wow.
and it was someone bought it on a phone line
I see.
back then.
Right.
But I don't even really know if that's legal to sell
Yeah, I would
something
doubt
like
it
that.
today, especially, I mean, with all the restrictions
Wait
that.
a minute, I'm just looking at something here.
So,
Hey.
was the shrunken head like in fluid or was it
No, no,
just
no.
like
It was all dried, and it
Ew.
was it
Ugh.
just looked like a miniature head, and it was good. Look at this. Okay. There's something online and it says even Christie's is selling shrunken heads. Is it shrunken heads? Yes, shrunken heads or head it says here. So Christie's, the auction gallery Christie's, is September 1981. It's talking about selling back then in 1997. So Christie's is selling shrunken heads.
All right. Must be legitimate
So yeah,
then.
hey, there could be a good business in that, in the shrunken head business, I
Oh,
guess.
that's really creepy.
That is pretty bad, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. What's we gotta move out of this one fast. Okay.
Yes. I don't know if I want to talk about that one any longer. Right. Moving right along. Has a bidder at an auction ever been particularly creative or outstanding that you would remember them? They have interesting technique, tricky, tons of cash,
Yeah.
shady characters,
There's,
all of the above.
yeah. Well, whenever there's large amounts of money involved in anything, there's always the dark side of that.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I've seen a lot of different things happen over the years as far as bidders go. Some really frustrating, we don't have to get into that, but let's think of the lighter side.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, Phyllis and I work together currently, and we work at a very busy regional auction house in California.
Very busy.
And we have a particular buyer that comes here that just kind of stands out from
Yeah.
everybody else,
We
and
won't specify,
we're not going to say
male
a
or
name.
female or
I said she kind of stands
Oh.
out.
All right.
Too late. Too late. Well, anyway,
Shmoopy.
this person buys like everything and expensive.
Yes.
Just think if you had, all right, just I don't want to say an addiction, but let's just put it like if you had all the money in the world and you could buy anything you wanted and you wanted to buy at auction, that's this person.
Yeah, basically.
And this person also has a huge warehouse. She's not a seller. She buys and puts in a warehouse. And we're talking Tiffany lamps, the real stuff. We're
Yeah.
talking major, major money.
Yeah.
And she's the top bidder on anything she wants to bid on.
Yeah.
And
She does not back down.
she buys it for the last dollar. So I don't know if there's any other dollar left in it. You know, with the economy changing, everything's changing all the time. You never know.
Right.
But I will tell you, the very good is still selling for all the money today. So she probably has made some great investments. But whenever someone like that goes to sell, you're always going to remember that's one less bidder. She's not going to be bidding on her own items when she goes to sell it.
Yeah, that's a good
So
point.
there's one less bidder, and that's her.
Yeah, that's a very important bidder.
Yeah. So we love to see this person walk into our auctions because we always know that things are going to go really well. I mean,
And
basically.
because she's such a delightful person.
She's a character.
She
She's a
is.
character. No, she is nice. Yeah, she
Yes.
is nice. Okay, you have another one real quick, or you want to call?
I think I'm ready to talk to John.
Let's see if we can get a hold of John McGinnis.
Mr.
Now, I
McGinnis.
have to tell you something a little bit funny. Phyllis and I recorded this session the other night, and we were really happy with it. We did the high five, and we said, "Hey, yeah, that went well."
Yep.
You know, so now she's asking me different questions and everything. You know why? Because the recorder wasn't working. So we're all excited. Hey, we did the show and our first show and everything. And we even called John McGinnis, who we're going to call right now, and had a pretty good conversation with him.
Yeah.
And
He's a really funny guy.
you know, the recorder wasn't on.
Yeah,
So
that's life.
anyway, in the future, we will be calling a lot of different people, a lot of possibly a couple of celebrities that we have connections with. And we're going to try to make this show really interesting. Another thing that we're going to do later on is we're going to get into subjects that we're going to research deeply, and then we're going to try to do a nice story about that subject in depth. And we will let you know ahead of time what that subject is going to be later on. So if you have any questions about or anything you want to talk to us about regarding the subject, we will gladly accept your emails. We may be talking with Willis Henry for Willis Henry Shaker Auctions back east. Has Oprah Winfrey as a customer, and a lot of Barbra Streisand, you know, those type of people go to his auctions. We're going to talk to a decoy, antique duck decoy specialist, a Civil War specialist. We'll try to make it rounded into every part of the business. There is a part of the business that was really strong that is not, and a lot of people remember Victorian, the oak furniture business, that is kind of like out the
Hurting.
window
Yeah.
almost. By way of Dodo Bird, it is gone,
Yeah.
more or less. But anyway, let's try to give John a call and see if we can get a hold of him. And
Yes.
this, if you ever have a chance to deal with John, if you're on the East Coast, John's a great guy. He runs a really good auction back in Amesbury, Massachusetts, and he gets a lot of interesting things. It's a treasure trove back there. You know, you get generations and
Right.
generations in each home,
Right.
and you never know what you're gonna find. All right, let's give it a try here. So, John and I worked together many years ago, and we worked together for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, but he and I have known each other since we were, oh, I think about 15 years old or something like that.
That's sweet.
And both of
You're
our
still in
dads were in the
contact.
auction business, antique business. And so hopefully we'll catch him. John McGinnis. Can you hear me, John? Doing
Hi,
good.
John.
I was just
Annie.
telling our future audience here about how we did the recording the other night, and the recorder wasn't working. So we'll give it another shot. How you doing, John? Oh, it's perfect. It's
Yeah.
California. What can you expect? It's raining back there like New England does, right? Yeah. 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 So John, we were just talking about different things that have happened at auctions and different colorful consignors and colorful buyers and things like that. And so I wanted to, well, first of all, you had a really interesting story happen once. I told a little bit about the Josiah Bartlett auction years ago. And
Great tale.
yeah, you had a a great story. Matter of fact, this whole story was on Find the Lee Kino did a show, and his brother did a show on your particular painting, right?
Yeah, it was actually two different episodes they filmed for that, the Kino Brothers, for the show Find, which was a Time Warner sponsored show.
Yeah. I remember sitting out here in California and turning on the TV and there you were. I was pretty shocked. So that was, but I did talk to you about that around that time. You and I were talking quite a bit on the phone. I remember that whole situation. So why don't you, what I'd really like you to do is just say how you found that painting and what the people thought it. I mean, the people had no idea. It was, go ahead, tell the story quickly. Hang on just a sec, John. Did when they paid for the appraisal already for the contents, had anyone spotted that painting? Ah, okay. All right. Go ahead. Sorry to bother you. Yeah, I remember those. Let me ask you this. Did the house, when you were looking through the items, did it appear, could you just tell from what was there that the family must have had money at one time? Yeah.
It was an older family, so they inherited, early 19th century pieces as well. It was nice Sheraton pieces, purple white pieces. So it was a lot of different periods covered. So you could tell it was a family home with a lot of pieces still intact, which is always kind of great to get in and see.
Oh, yeah. Now, were you actually doing an appraisal yourself as
No, I
well?
was only doing a walkthrough. I was talking
Oh,
about doing
okay.
an
I
auction.
see.
And the owners of the house.
I know what you mean. Oh, yeah. Square
Get in
nails.
and dig a little bit, move things out of the way. Everything was dirty and dusty. And it was a hot summer night here in New England, so it was, just getting in there, reading it, getting all the stuff out. Finally got to it, pulled it out, and I said, "Well, this is a good one." But it was filthy dirty. It also had some water damage.
Now, wasn't the scene a nocturne scene to begin
But
with?
you could, being a, what we do is you could see through that soot and realize that it was a very fine quality painting because it had
Yes.
no, it wasn't a big buildup of paint. It was very flat paintings. take it home, you know, back to the gallery that night, which I did. And put the thing into the back of the truck and you know, got the thing back. Plus, I brought it to the home, my home that night, and cleaned it down enough to look for the signature. We did find the signature. So, at that point, called her back, you know, the next day and told her what I found. Told her it's going to be worth some money and probably going to be worth six figures. You know, probably in the range of $200,000 to $250,000.
Okay, well, you want to say who the artist was? Yeah, Martin Johnson Heed.
Yeah, and so
doesn't get much better than that. Now this was a nocturne, right? It was a nighttime scene.
Yeah, it was a get more of an evening scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sunset.
Right, on a marsh or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I remember that. Yeah. Simon
actually,
Willard or
the
Aaron
Willard. Top clock actually belonged to late at night out here. But it belonged to a very important family here in Massachusetts. It was actually John Quincy Adams' clock.
Oh boy.
One of the presidents. So Keenan's had come up to look at that clock.
Mm.
And they come up the night before the auction. So we went out for dinner late that night and they told me they were looking for an interesting situation of an attic find. So,
what a coincidence that is.
Very coincidence. So, anyways, we ended up getting a whole show on this. We actually filmed the house where the painting was found, the lady who owned his mother's house it was, and they actually did a whole filming of the painting being sold at auction, where it ultimately ended up selling it for just over $1 million.
Just over $1 million. Now, John, I remember calling you a couple of days before the auction, and I said, "What do you think that Heed's going to go for?" And at the time, you said, "I remember you said how you say your New England accent." You go, "Marty, I think that's going to sell for $500,000." You said that to me, and then I remember talking to you after it. Tell me if you remember this. You said afterwards, you almost got a little choked up when it hit. You had your son standing beside you when you were selling this on the
yeah.
block.
Yeah.
And you got almost a little choked up when you hit around 500 and it just kept going, right?
Yeah, it kept going. Now it's the guy who bought it, I believe, is doing it at the Fogg Museum at Harvard.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's great.
Wow.
So, throwing it along there.
Now, a lot of Martin Johnson Heats are not that type of money. What was the reason? How did that one? Is it because it was untouched?
It was the typical auction drama. We had 2 feet of snow on the ground. So everybody drove to the sale.
Oh, yeah. And this is this was pre-internet too, is that right?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the internet, of course, makes a huge difference.
2004. Internet for us, we weren't using.
Yeah, yeah. The internet was around, but not used so much back then. But
the
wow, what a story that is! Yeah, the good old days. It seems like now it's a lot more work. People
yeah,
want
no,
more
great.
Information.
Yeah,
I'd say that was appropriate for that show they did.
Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, that was that's
a
good story. Thank you for that. I remember that whole situation, how exciting it was. And I was out here in California at that time and working at an auction gallery. And someone came, before I even knew what the thing sold for, someone came bursting into the office, a local, and said, "Hey, did you hear what that Martin Johnson Heed brought?" And I said, "No, what did it bring? What did it bring?" And he said $1 million, and I go, "Oh my God!" That I was so excited for you. That was you deserved it. You know, I mean, it was John. I've known basically since we were like 15, and John's no one works harder in this business and deserves it. You know, you've always worked really hard, and you've done a really good job for people. And this is just a testament to it, right there. It's bound to happen if you do it long enough. But there's not too many $1 million paintings that pop up like this. I mean, there's only a handful in the country that this happens to, you know. So
well, we can go on with stories, that's for sure. We've had we were around when a lot of the great dealers from the 40s and 50s, you know, we're still dealing in the 70s. You and I were there.
Oh, yeah.
kids to really hear a lot of those what went on,
Yeah.
things that they found, things that happened.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I mean, things were discarded back then.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, you think of what's been unearthed over the years that's come up at auction, and the thing that I always find hard to believe is when people have no idea. I mean, that's the most amazing part. It's when someone can have something in their home, you know, for generations, and they have no idea that they have this important thing. And then, you know, that's why there's so many people going running around to yard sales and estate sales, because the knowledge of what people have gets lost a lot of times from just one generation to the next. You know, so, and that's
Right now, with the gold and silver push, people are constantly taking silver to get scrap, and they're actually, and there is stories of 18th century silver going to scrappers.
that's getting melted or
Well, over
proposed
the
to.
years,
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Well, Phyllis happens to be a silver specialist here at Clars. Well, wait a minute. You know, you two met on the phone the other night, but introduction again, Phyllis, John, Phyllis.
Hi.
Phyllis is really, now Phyllis has only been around the business for a few years, but I'll tell you what, she focuses on silver, and she's a real sharp girl, and she knows more about silver than I do, and I've been at this, you know, basically all my life. So she's really getting involved in, and on the West Coast out here, you never know what we're going to get for silver. We get a lot of Georgian pieces out here, and you know, fine European pieces, and George Jensen galore out here. You never, it's really a real mix what comes out
Yeah,
this way.
definitely.
So you wanted to ask John something?
Well, I just recall last time when we talked, we talked about something really funny.
Oh, something funny. So we're what you know, there's always something. It wasn't that funny. Now, there's always something that happened. Well, what's your take on this? I tell people this because I believe in it, that there's always, at every auction, there's always a bargain. Then at every auction, it always seems like something goes much higher than you ever thought it was. That's right.
I don't care if you're in New York, London, wherever, some of the biggest auction houses continually make mistakes.
John, I remember just one thing just popped in my head right now. When you and I worked together a long time ago, there was a guy named Jerry, that's all I'll just say his first name. He bought an Abbot Fuller Graves painting at a little auction down in Massachusetts for $25 that you sold for 40, right? Was it 40? Yeah. So I mean, it still can happen. These things still can happen. There still can be some finds. And one of the segments we're going to do here is on great finds. We're going to call all kinds of people and ask them, you know, what was your greatest find? So that should be
Oh,
pretty
you have a
interesting.
great collection, and wish you guys a lot of luck with this venture. I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
Get good stories.
Well,
It'll be
we want to
fun.
have some
Great.
fun.
Yeah.
But okay, John, real
We'll come up
quickly.
with some funny stories.
Now, John and I was at an auction many years ago that his now John's whole family's in the auction business, brother, sister, and in the antique business and rug business. The whole family's, and they're like flies all over the antique
A
business,
monopoly over
a
there.
monopoly. John and I were was at an auction a number of years ago, and John, we'll go ahead and tell the story about our friend and the chair. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. We're gonna do a segment on a find at a later date, on finds at a later date.
Sidelines.
Yeah.
Laughing about the other day.
Yeah.
This is a situation, you had to be there.
Yeah, you had to be, maybe it won't even be funny, but go ahead and tell it anyway. Heavy set, like won't we say about 450, 500 pounds? Was it that high? Was it that high? I think it was. It was
no, maybe
good 400.
50 to 350.
Really, 350. Hard
yeah,
to say.
And,
still no slouch.
But he couldn't sit in a regular folding chair that particular day, so we got him a Bolt Firehouse Windsor chair. And he sat in the chair, and about 2 hours later, the chair literally fell apart.
He was eating pizza at the time, right?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
And
he started to laugh. Of course, when he started to laugh, everybody else started to laugh.
Yeah, I remember the whole thing. It was like first
the
explosion.
Then we could stop laughing.
It was like an explosion, and there was dust.
The chair exploded.
There was dust flying. Yeah.
But he's a very comical guy, and he stood up, he was laughing, and it was fine. Everything's brought to a problem. It was just, everybody's laughing. The auctioneer was laughing. I was laughing. You were laughing.
Well, I remember the auctioneer, who was your brother, could not stop laughing. It was like, he couldn't get the auction going, and keep in mind, John's brother is not known for laughing too much, if I can say that. And he just couldn't stop laughing. And then, so Bobby gets, I said his name, Bobby gets up and brushes himself off and walks around. And then he walks around behind John's brother, who's auctioning. And John's brother turns around and goes, "What are you doing anyway?" And he goes, "I'm just looking at my new auction hall." In other words, he was going to sue. But that was... again, I guess you'd have to be there, but that there's a lot of interesting things that happened.
Did he get
happened.
To sit down again?
Oh, yeah, he was fine. He was fine. Right. Now, my someone that I knew used to cut his hair, and they had to keep pumping the chair up because the chair kept, settling back down. Yeah. But,
oh,
yeah, he was a great – he was a legend in the antique business, Bobby.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, John, it's been great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And, John, your website – what's your website address?
McGinnisMCINNISauctions.com.
And that's in Amesbury, Massachusetts. All right, John. Thanks a lot.
All right.
And I'll
take
talk to you soon.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Great.
All right.
Guys.
So that was the great John McGinnis back in Massachusetts. So this is just a little taste of what our show is going to be like. We will have different segments on different topics. Again, go to our website, antiqueauctionpodcast.com, and you'll see our topics on there. And please feel free to email us. We're always looking for ideas.
Requests.
And if you're a specialist and you're involved in a certain type of collection, we may even contact you and have you in one of our shows in the future. And I guess that's going to be our show for now.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun.
That
we hope
good.
You... enjoy it. And again, we're always open to ideas and hope you find this entertaining.
Please email us auctionpodcast@me.com.
M-E. That's it. Martin Willis here and
Phyllis Gall
signing out. Thank you.